So through one way or another, we get from chemistry to biology to these simple cells able to survive, make energy and reproduce. But the cells in you and I, along with all animals, plants and fungi, are a little bit more complicated than that. There are little membrane-bound compartments inside each one doing little jobs. There's the nucleus, which houses the genetic material, the mitochondria, which power the cell, and in plants there are chloroplasts, which are what enable them to convert sunlight into energy through photosynthesis. So how did these unfurnished cells get kitted out to become what we now call eukaryotes?
There's been quite a debate about this, and in the late 1960s, Lynn Margulis, very famous for the Gaia hypothesis, she put forward this idea that had been around for 100 years, or maybe even longer, that it's due to endosymbiosis, that one cell swallowed up and retained another cell inside it, and that this cell eventually became the mitochondrion. And once you understand how the mitochondrion gets there, you might understand how you get this kind of intracellular complexity that makes eukaryote cells.
So one cell eats another one, and instead of getting digested, it just stays there. It's now thought that before this unusual meal took place, the cells were already starting to become more complex on their insides, somehow creating these compartmental barriers.
What you imagine is they get a mutation of some kind that generates all kinds of membranes inside the cell and gives the cell a capacity, let's say, to move things around in a more sophisticated way. And ultimately, having those membranes inside the cell helps make compartments. And so when eventually one day this cell gets a bacterium inside it, it holds on to that bacteria with the membrane and eventually converts it to the mitochondrion. And the same thing happens a bit later on, another half billion years later, with what's called the chloroplast. So this was a free-living, photosynthesizing bacterium which gets swallowed up by one of these complexifying cells. And because of these membranes and other structures inside, it's held there and made to do work.
And in this acquisition, what are these cells doing? Are they trying to eat them, or is it a mistake? And either way, why doesn't it get destroyed when they're inside this cell?
First, I'm sure it happens many, many times, and by far the majority get destroyed or digested. I think there are different points of view, but you can imagine if you can swallow up a cell, if you've got a sort of membrane that allows you to swallow up other cells, this is a great source of food, right? So you've got all these other bacteria and archaea out there, you're a cell that's getting bigger yourself because you've got different membranes and compartments inside. You want food. And if you're able to swallow up cells, you're basically taking them into your body, which is just one cell size. And then if you happen not to digest one, or if one of them is something like a parasite even and manages to stay there despite you trying to digest it. But eventually it might happen that cell that's ingested is retained. And once that happens, and if it can be passed on to the next generation, and if either it's not causing harm or it starts to cause a little bit of advantage, that thing will be retained. And the exact circumstances, I mean, it's, you know, still, I think, quite a mystery.
And do we have any evidence? How do we know that cells didn't just build their own mitochondria? Why do we think there was this external event?
This is a great question, and I think it's a very nice historical one too. And this is why Lynn Margulis is so important to the story. So people had thought way back in the 1890s and even before, so there's quite a bit of history on this, that perhaps the mitochondrion and especially the chloroplast were bacteria. They looked like bacteria. They had these membranes around them. They, in some ways, seemed to do metabolic activities that looked like bacteria. But that isn't conclusive evidence. So what Lynn Margulis did is she gathers together some of the structural evidence. Oh, look at their membranes. What kind of membranes have they got? She also looks at what they're doing and how they're doing it. She looks at the structure of various parts of these endosymbionts. What she's then able to do is draw on the molecular evidence. Now, she doesn't do any of this molecular stuff, but what happens is, in the 70s and 80s, what begins to flourish is the idea of using molecules to understand evolution. So you take molecules from an organism, and then using various evolutionary models, you're able to extrapolate back to the past. And as people look at the DNA from the mitochondria and the DNA from the chloroplast, by the beginning of the 1980s, it's conclusive. The DNA of the chloroplast and the DNA of the mitochondrion is the DNA that's the most closely related to contemporary bacteria. And because of the other structural things of having membranes, having things inside the mitochondrion and chloroplast, everybody is convinced by this. It takes a few years, but what was once a sort of strange, marginal idea, let's say even as late as the 60s, becomes a completely standard thing to think by the 80s and 90s.
Maureen O'Malley on the microbial meal which changed the world.